This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
This is Make Your Listening Trivial Thursdays on WRFL, here with my friend Leif Erickson.
Oh, friend, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, he paid me, so.
That's true. So many comments I won't make. But, yes, I'm happy to be here.
You're back.
I'm happy to be anywhere.
You've been lost in a cherry orchard for a while.
Yes, I have. Man, what an experience that was. For those of you who don't know, it was a play in a mansion built in 1852 with no air conditioning or running water.
Right. So it's like normal for theater people.
Well, it was, you know what? That's funny you say that, because everybody in this was very experienced theater people, but yeah. We all looked at each other like, what is going on? Because that first week of our run, we did 2 weeks in a row, 12 shows in 13 days, and the first week it was in the 90s, and it's supposed to be 1903 winter in Russia, so we're all wearing wool
oh my God,
three-piece suits and overcoats and pretending it's cold as we go in the house sweating. See, the audience was in the room with us. It's called Site Specific Productions. We had our dressing rooms in the slave quarters downstairs, which was, you know, very sobering to think of people living down there, and there were spiders down there. It was a crazy time. I was a paid gig.
Did you come to see why site-specific theater isn't done more often? Or
well, you know, I did a site-specific with this same group called On the Verge Productions. I did one back in 2009 at the Hunt Morgan House, and it was a piece of cake compared to this. But, you know, we all ended up very close, the cast and crew, because we spent so much time in that environment, in that basement and upstairs in the house. It's a magnificent house.
Yeah.
I went to Georgetown College, but somehow missed that house, which is in Georgetown.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a cool...
Yeah, did the audience, like, follow you around? Is that you know...
Yes.
Of course, me asking indicates that I egregiously missed the performance, but...
Oh, you know, it was an expensive ticket. I didn't ask any of my friends to go for that reason. I figured if they found out and wanted to go, that's fine, but I wasn't going to pressure anybody to go.
It sounded so cool.
It was. It was worth the money if you had it, because it is a unique experience. I mean, not to throw that word unique around, which gets thrown around a lot, but it really... It's like nothing I've ever been a part of, and I've been in plays since I was six. Basically, I've never been a part of anything quite like that. I don't want to say life changing and overblow it, but it kind of was, really.
So, did the audience like follow people around? Audience standing or
no? They most of the time they were sitting. Some scenes they were standing, like the scenes in the Great Hall, they would stand. But we had an eccentric violinist who, and he was really, truly very eccentric backstage and everything. Strange guy. I love him. Lovely guy. But just, you know, this is coming from
like
a weird
words
person.
Eccentric violinist put together.
Yeah. Well, he would lead the people. He would start playing the violin and sort of indicate with his body which direction they were to go in the audience. And they told them this ahead of time, like, this guy is your guy. But he wouldn't actually say anything. He would just play the violin, and they would follow him to the next room, and there were chairs, or out in the hallway where they stood and watched the action. And they went upstairs once. We even had a scene planned in the garden, but the director liked it better inside when we practiced the rain contingency plan, so we just kept it inside. It's a beautiful house.
So. This ran over the course of 2 weekends, I think. Right?
Yes. Well, Tuesday through Sunday, and then a Monday off, and then Tuesday through Sunday.
So you actually did get a lot of rain.
Not during the shows.
No,
We were preparing for rain, but we grew a couple of sprinkles. And then the last day, there was a storm right before we started, I think. But it dissipated by the time we began.
Okay. So. Well, Leif Erickson here as my I'm happy to have him along as the occasional
ne'er-do-well.
Ne'er-do-well.
No, I'm a full-time ne'er-do-well, just an occasional co-host,
right.
I guess.
And maybe part-time dilettante also, I don't know.
Right. There's a 10 of diamonds on this. Is this like I'm going to be executed, and this is where they put the card to let the assassin? Is one of you? Somebody's an assassin.
Leif's also brought his persecution complex along. Well done.
Well, it's not paranoia if people really are out to get you.
Well,
that's what they say in the medical field. That guy said he was a psychologist. I don't know. I paid him in Snickers.
I'm happy to have you back.
Thank you.
let's see. We've got we've got some people for we've got a couple guests coming around for Leaf to talk over. He'll Now, we're going to take a break here and come back with some people from the downtown courthouse project, from some people from the Lexington Fayette Urban County Government project that a lot of us are pretty excited about.
I am. It's true.
To rehab the old courthouse before it gets turned into lawyer offices. So anyway, we're going to take a little break here and we'll be back. So stick around. This is Trivial Thursdays on Pavement there. Kentucky's own, sort of. Kentucky slash California. One of the guys, I don't know, one of the guys from Pavement. Bob Nastanovich, Nasty Bob, we like to call him if you're a Pavement fan. From Louisville, so with Grave Architecture, my official architecture song that I so often play when I have architects come visit Trivial Thursdays.
They sometimes pave things, or are in charge of them being paved.
All right. Oh, right. Then there's the right. See,
right. That's a segue.
My intrepid co-host finds yet another connection there.
We call that a segue in the biz.
Right. I don't know that, you know, I mean, roads get paved. Jessica Walker, do roofs get paved sometimes? Or
you put concrete on roofs sometimes, yes.
But you probably don't take the steamroller up there.
No, not guessing. The steamroller, no.
Yeah, okay. Jessica Walker's here. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm great. It's good to see you. You brought Jennifer Wierenma along, right?
Hello, yes.
How's that? That's pretty good, right? Yeah. Hi, Jennifer. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having us here.
Yeah, we insisted that you come down and tell us about what's going to happen to that John Hunt Morgan statue is what we want to know.
If you go down and look, he's being protected right now. He's getting all sorts of boxing around him right now. So yeah. He's in there. Okay. Go look through the slats.
Am I still going to be able to get in there with my can of spray paint?
No.
Do you guys know that? Do you know that? You know the legend of that, right? Or whatever.
Well, I
How does
know.
It work? Let's talk about it. It's okay to talk about it.
So John Hunt Morgan had spray paint in the Civil War. And what he would do is he would go around and tag different Union outposts.
Uh-huh.
Stop me.
Where would he tag them?
In the parlor.
With the spray paint.
With the spray paint, yeah, and a wrench.
Oh, okay. You guys are involved in, I mean, I really do want to continue with that, to tell you the truth. You're involved in the courthouse renovation. One of the things is the statues.
Yes.
We've been sort of, we've jumped through some hoops, maybe more to come. Some people, there's historical issues about the statues. There's gender issues about.
Yeah, yes, there
are. We can get back to the spray paint thing. So right now, have you noticed this? I don't know if it's a myth or not. Right. So what I've heard is that the statue. I'm just going right to it because we can talk about this. I can tell that Leif Erickson, I don't think he knows what I'm talking about here.
What's that?
The John Hunt Morgan statue has him perched on a male horse,
right,
on a stallion, and historical accuracy would beg that it's actually a mare. And so consequently, are some group of angry equine activists, or I don't know, who... The symbolic way of dealing with that apparently is by spraying the stallion's bollocks blue.
I have heard that many
times.
I just said
bollocks on the radio.
Well,
Sex Pistols did it. I can do it.
He's been standing there for a while, you know. So never mind. I'm not going to make that joke. But I don't know how they knew that the horse delivered mail. Did they have a pouch on the side or something? How do they know it's a male horse? Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here all week.
Or at least for a few more minutes.
Supposedly, this is family lore, that one of my relatives was John Hunt Morgan's assistant of some sort. My uncle lives in Georgia, and he's all about the Confederacy and War of Northern Aggression, the whole thing. And he tells me this with pride, which it cracks me up that it makes perfect sense to me that someone in my family was a lackey for someone on a losing side of a war. But they're very proud of it. So,
well, I do. I, you know, there's like, if you get into not that I have, but like past life regression and stuff. There's never, it seems like you never encounter anybody who's just like, I come from a long line of assistants.
Right.
You know, you're always like a prince, you know, like a prince or something.
I have a past life aggression. Like, I used to live. Nothing.
So, anyway, that's just, we're not even in the door yet of the courthouse. Nobody can go in there, by the way, right?
No, nobody can go in there.
Unless you got a special hard hat.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to find one on eBay, not the right kind.
They especially can't go in right now because we're under environmental remediation process, which means we're taking the lead and the asbestos out of the building right now. So, yeah.
Jim Shambu, if you're listening, I am going to play Asbestos, Lead, Asbestos, okay? Just... for our guests and for the courthouse. So the courthouse, this used to be, it was, when was this place built?
1890-ish. Okay. Yeah. And there were four courthouses on this spot. And
oh, this is the fourth one?
Yeah.
Holy
yeah,
cow.
They're burned down, torn down, everything in between. So, and then this one's been standing, of course, now for, gosh, over 100 years. And so it was used for a courthouse till the, I guess, the 1990s.
I think that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a major intervention in the 60s that tore it up. So that's essentially what we're dealing with at this point.
And so, it's I'm always I look at a stone building like that, and I'm like, what could you do to it? Yeah. But there's a lot you could do.
The sins of the fathers, There were decisions that were made that they had their hands tied. Old building like that, it's originally designed, there's no air conditioning, there's no elevator. So when those technologies came into existence and became, something that the courthouse needed, they... took over, as a nice way to say it, that central, beautiful atrium that had the view all the way from the ground floor all the way up into the dome. And so they put a big elevator shaft there, and they put HVAC units that were huge, these huge HVAC units up in the dome, and opened that up for fresh air intake and things like that. So a lot of the old paint and things like that got destroyed just because of the necessity.
Don't you think they thought it was a really good idea?
They thought it was the best idea ever. We didn't have geothermal back then.
Do you ever
either.
Worry that you're having a really good idea?
Yes, it's awful. Yes.
We wake
People
up thinking
like,
about this
day after day, yes.
So just to be clear, for anyone who's not exactly sure what we're talking about Lexington's venerable courthouse.
Yes.
Hard to miss it, downtown. Yes. It's made of limestone?
I don't know.
Is it limestone?
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it's in the course of the last couple decades some interesting stuff is, the Lexington History Museum was there for a while. They tried people have kind of tried to make a go of it.
Yes.
And it's... But then, at some point, how long ago was it where they're like, okay, everybody out?
Gosh, it's probably been 4 years now.
Okay. Yeah,
they just had, they went inside and said it's just not safe for people to be in this building anymore.
Right.
Okay.
So,
that's when they detected all the lead and asbestos that needed to be remediated. They just kind of shuttered everything until they could come up with money.
Right. Could they come over to my basement afterwards?
Okay. I was kind of hoping for a giant pit in the ground that everybody fought over for a decade. Can we not do that? Or put a Walmart there or something?
A Walmart. There we go. Yeah.
I mean, we need to make some progress in
like
this city.
Adjacent,
a parking lot, maybe.
It'd be an adjacent pit.
Adjacent pit? I knew him, Jason Pitt. He was right next to... Never mind. I can't even finish the joke, really.
This is Trivial Thursdays. Jennifer, we're in my... You are... So what's your... I'm here with Jennifer and also with Jessica Walker. Jennifer, what's your capacity with this?
Well, I work for the mayor's office, essentially, and CAO Sally Hamilton. And so essentially our role was both to get this in the budget, to get it through the budget, and to, sort of coordinate with everybody. You've never seen so many moving pieces in your life. We're using historic tax credits, so that has it's a whole nother beast.
Right.
And so we've got sort of all these moving pieces and all these moving parts, and so my boss and I essentially coordinate all of that, have made sure that we have constant communication with consultant after consultant to get this done. But the tax credits are great. We had this sort of short opportunity to utilize the state's money, the Fed's money. So we've done that to sort of close the gap between what the mayor and the city council put in and what we need to actually complete the project. So even though there's a lot of nuance and it's difficult and we have our days, it's been necessary to actually have the funding all come together.
So did this start out like with somebody saying, we need to fix the courthouse, and you saying,
Mayor,
no, we can't
Mayor
do
Gray,
that.
Yes.
We need to fix the courthouse. No, you can't do that. We need to fix the court. But no, Mayor Gray's been, he's been interested for
He
a
has.
While.
You know, he has this affinity for these old, beautiful buildings and, of course, for Lexington, obviously. So he came to us and said, you know, this is the center of downtown. It's the heart of downtown. The pavilion's here. You know, we've got all this
There's already
energy.
Plenty of lawyers' offices.
Yeah. There's all these lawyers'
Sorry,
offices.
Keep coming back to that.
Yeah. So we want to change this. We want to do something with it. And most people, I'm not sure they know, but the city of Lexington owns the courthouse. It's ours. And so it's not the state's, and it's not, we
Lexington.
Own it.
Okay.
And so since we do, and because of its location, he really felt strongly about making this, giving some life back to this old building. And it is stunning. The rotunda, which most people probably have never seen, this big dome, it's just, it's probably the most spectacular place in Lexington, if not beyond.
I'm very excited about that, actually.
It's awesome.
The rotunda.
As we are kind of, as I was joking about a minute ago about like them, I mean, I've been up there actually. The door was unlocked.
Yeah.
And
not surprised.
Anyway,
last night?
But it's hard to, like, the when all that HVAC stuff was up there, there's so many questions. How did it even get up there?
Yeah, you're right.
It's so
right.
huge. It was so huge because as people will one day in the not too distant future see, the you call it the rotunda?
Mm-hmm.
Is giant. It's,
oh, yeah, it's
giant.
Enormous. Yeah.
And it was mostly filled with this enormous air-pushing machine.
Yeah, literally. It's just like ductwork and silver boxes, you know, everywhere.
It was like straight out of Brazil. Did you watch Brazil yet?
No, I have not.
You have to watch Brazil.
I haven't found it. I have to watch that movie.
It looks straight out of Terry Gilliam's Brazil. It was crazy looking up there.
Yeah.
So when this project first started to hatch, I mean, how do you even start with something like this?
Well, I think, you know, the best way to put it is you sort of start with a vision that's almost overwhelming, I would say.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure Jessica would agree with that. And, of course, through the process, we've had to have, you know, people who this is what they do, these tax credit folks from all over the place, lawyers, accountants, everybody in between. But I would say mostly it comes from that push, you know, from the mayor just to say, like, we have to do something with this. And when you go in the building and you actually look up and see that this gem is downtown Lexington, you realize, like, I can see why he had this vision. And so took a lot of support from the Urban County Council. I mean, they had to support this, and they have, and we've been so thankful for that. We had to get the funding in place, and they had to agree to sell this huge bond, $22 million.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just been conversation after conversation. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of conversations and meetings to make it happen. We're just thrilled, but now we're about to start. I mean, it's been 2 years of prep to get a shovel in the ground, which is sort of where Jessica's come in.
I've only been on for the last 4 months or so.
Yeah.
I haven't been involved. They've done all the hard work of getting everything set up. I'm just getting to have the fun doing the construction.
Jessica Walker, you're an architect. Work for the city.
I've graduated from architecture school, yes.
Like a George Costanza architect? Like a George Costanza kind of Vandalay industry architect?
I know what you're saying.
I would
there.
Get in trouble if
I, know what
I
you're
said
saying.
I would
okay.
not. I'm not, I'm
okay,
not
I'll
a
you
licensed
back.
Architect, but I am
right,
in, the,
okay.
in the field.
In the field
yes.
of architecture.
Yes, yeah, so and now I work
I know
for
how
the
that
city.
Club works.
Yes. So now I work for the city, and I am in general services, which is basically we are the project managers for all capital construction of city buildings,
mm-hmm.
any renovations, new construction, so on and so forth.
So Splash Park, did you do that?
No, Splash Park is actually a grant, isn't it?
That one is.
Yes, that is a grant.
Northeastern, yes.
Yeah, Northeastern Splash Park is a grant.
Mm-hmm. As someone who grew up here, I'm actually really pleased that we have a mayor who actually cares about the city, the architecture, you know, because I know he was against, or it seems, my memory seems like he was against the kerfuffle of Centerpoint, if I remember correctly, when he was vice mayor, when it wasn't politically expedient necessarily to speak out. He did. I admire that. And keeping these buildings, you know, when he can, alive. As someone, like I said, who grew up here, it's depressing, really disheartening to me to think of all the places that have disappeared, just unceremoniously gone.
Absolutely.
Yeah, my great aunt Martha lived on Gibson Avenue, and there was this big mansion up at the top of the hill back there. Now they turned it into a parking lot and a trailer park, which God bless people who have to live in a trailer park. But the mansion's gone. It was a mansion.
Yes.
You know, it's just so many things in the 80s, especially. It was like a parking lot would be good here. You know,
yeah.
Oh,
we saw it wasn't too long ago. David O'Neill, I had seen posts. saw that he posted something on Facebook or Twitter, and it was sort of an aerial view of everything that had been sort of destroyed or torn down, and there was these red blocks, you know, all over looking downtown Lexington. And so when I saw that, it just, the mayor had already said he wanted to save this building, but when I saw that, it just became so clear to me that, you know, it's so important if we can, mm-hmm. and it's viable, to do something to keep this building intact and actually make it a place that we can all go use it. It's taxpayer money, so right. we want people yeah. to go in there and enjoy it.
That's one of the things I love about that project, is that it's going to be used actively and bringing in money for the city and for
that individuals. Was a big deal to him. Yep. Yeah.
Well, so, you know, we are in these kind of, I don't know. I mean, do you think we're in sort of more considerate times in terms of preserving this sort of stuff? I mean, the question, it always seems to come down to the bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, and it comes from leadership, too, I think, with Jim Gray. I actually worked for Jim Gray at Gray Construction back
that's right.
at the beginning of my career is mm-hmm. in architecture.
In the field of architecture.
In the field of architecture. So it does. It comes from
using your
leadership.
Architecture degree.
Yes.
So I have a question. Go ahead.
Well, no. So, I mean, so you feel like leadership it plays a role in it?
Absolutely. The understanding of it. Not saying that any of the other mayors or anything like any other leadership does not have that understanding, but mm-hmm. it does help.
I'm not having
has,
any of the other mayors on my radio
right.
show just right now.
Our city has boomed
yes.
since he's been mayor, and he's put emphasis on the infrastructure and the and buildings and you know, all the public works that he needs to do, because he understands that those things need to be in place and working for a city to actually be able to then prosper.
Do you remember when this courthouse project kind of landed on your desk and what you thought about that?
I kind of forced myself into it.
She knew I didn't have a clue about architecture, lead, or asbestos. So.
Well, like I said, they had done so much of the heavy
You're
lifting.
You're doing the sort of, oh,
yeah.
Oh,
I did. Later. I yeah. did. Me, yeah. me, me. Let's not mess this up. Yeah. I don't want, you know, because we were asked, Jamshid Baradaran, who is the director of facilities and fleet, who's in my general services division. He and I were asked to kind of help out at the beginning stages of soliciting for the architect and the engineers, and then soliciting for any construction managers or construction that was going to happen, just because that's what we do every day for mm-hmm. the city. So when that happened, that's when, you know, Jamshid and I were thinking, well, you know, they've got it under control, but we need to start helping them, especially when the rubber hits the road and we're trying to get, you know, contractors on site. So ever since then is when I've kind of taken it upon myself to help, and mm-hmm. then was then charged with it. And it's been, I think, a really good situation here. We've got a lot of stuff going on. The remediation project is actually an LFUCG project, which was a grant, a Brownsfield grant, that the EPA gave us money to do. And so that project is actually all through
the city.
And then now the renovation, the interior and exterior renovation of the courthouse itself is through the LLLP, which yes. I'll let Jennifer kind of talk about.
We had
about.
To form an entity that was a for-profit so we could utilize tax credits, because, of course, the city doesn't pay taxes.
Okay.
So that in and of itself has been, you know, I learned more in the last year on that than I've done all through college or anything. So, but anyway, so we're, this for-profit entity is going to operate the building. They're sort of doing all of this, and they have a lease with the, you know, the city essentially to do that.
You mean sort of after it's finished, they're going to operate the building? Or
They will, or they'll hire an operator. They're sort of in charge of the management and everyday operations of this facility.
Okay.
So that's, it's complicated, it's complex, but the IRS tells us this is how we do it. So this is how we do it.
Well, this is how we do it a lot these days, it seems like, is by coming up with these nonprofit / for-profit partnership.
I think what happens is that, you know, all these projects are just so expensive, and there's only so many dollars that go around. So if you can sort of capitalize on some opportunities to have partnerships, I think that the city does that, and I think others do that as well. You know, you can GoFundMe for this and that and all these things. And so this was just the way we were able to get this particular project done.
We're talking to Jennifer Wierenma and Jessica Walker, who are thoroughly involved and ensconced in the downtown. What do you guys call it? The courthouse restoration project?
Yeah,
historic Fayette County Courthouse, historic Lexington Courthouse. Mm-hmm.
And this is Trivial Thursday, so we're going to take a little break here because we really just have to play. This is Trivial Thursdays. I'm your host, Mick. I'm here with Leif Erickson is here.
Hello.
And also Jennifer Warrenma and Jessica Walker are both here from the Courthouse Restoration Project.
Sounds good.
Right? Yeah. Have you branded this enough?
Yeah. There's actually a website now.
Okay. Well, see, this is good. This is important information. We're talking about the restoration of Lexington's historic downtown courthouse, and there's a website, which is
historiclexingtoncourthouse.com.
Oh, well done for not including it under the...
it's really like innovative.
LFUCG/...
We didn't want a lot of slashes, so we made it...
question mark, squiggly, delta. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is where... So people can find out there some of the... You drive by, or you walk by, or you bike by, and... there's a fence up, and you know something's going on, but you're not exactly sure what it is.
Yep.
And so, what is going on in there? Jessica, you said you've been doing remediation.
Environmental remediation, which means the building has lead paint, of course, since the paint is so old and it's been flaking throughout the time that the building has been, kind of shuttered. And also because of the way that the HVAC up in the rotunda has kind of, caused that flaking to happen. So there's a whole lead paint cleanup process that has to happen. And then also, back in the day, they used asbestos for insulation, so the HVAC is insulated with asbestos and the piping and things like that. So that is also another article that needs to be removed. And then, of course, we had birds that came into the building, and there's guano then that needs to be removed. So that's...
You don't mean like a bird or two, right?
talking about the whole pigeon population of Lexington, yes.
That is their address. Like,
that's where they all live. Yes. That's where they all live.
Any chance of remediating the poop? Can you use it for anything?
No. Use it again?
No. Discard.
No. Yeah, that all goes into a special landfill somewhere that we just don't need to know where it is.
No.
So that's been that part. This project is underway. We still have a month or two left in the remediation process, but we've also then got the exterior that can happen concurrently, and then once all the remediation is done is when we can start on the interior renovations.
Now, you mentioned before that the rotunda used to go all the way from the ground floor to the top, and I didn't realize that.
You can definitely see that all the way from the ground floor all the way to the top. That's the way that the building used to be designed. There was openings in the floor. The new design for the building will have glass floors so that you could see from the ground floor all the way to the rotunda. And the only reason why we put glass in and filled those holes is just because of HVAC. We need to be able to control those spaces independently and not also for fire and smoke issues so that there's not what we call a chimney effect. But if there was a fire on the ground floor, that way we don't have something that moves through the building really quickly.
Well, so these are pretty interesting observations on how public spaces have changed so much in the time since the courthouse was built, right? I mean, you have to like actually sort of structure it differently to account for some of the amazing space age safety technology that we have now.
Absolutely. Yeah, you get a lot of cookie cutter kind of, sandwich kinds of buildings because of regulations that keep us safe and healthy. You don't want, different airs coming to different places. If you've got, a kitchen someplace, you don't want, that kind of exhaust air coming back in and not asphyxiating, but, getting to the people that occupy that building. So this kind of idea of, this glass floor that lets you see throughout the entire building is innovative and our architects are very, very adept at, coming up with these great ideas.
Careful when you wear a skirt in that building is one of the
That's very true.
We talk about that. We did, it was sort of important to the mayor and our architects. We've got Deborah Burke, who did the 21 C's in Lexington and some other places, and K. Norman Berry out of Louisville. But they, it was really important to them that there was this sort of juxtaposition, this old limestone historic building with, carved faces in the entrances and all these different things. And then you come in and it's this like clean, crisp, modern look to it. It's sort of a feel that people expect. So it's going to be really something different than you've seen in Lexington. So, and it was important to the mayor that it felt just that way.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a question. Okay, so obviously when people tore down all those buildings back in the 60s and 80s and all that, that travesty that happened, obviously they thought those buildings didn't have any value. Mm-hmm. So, and it's true that some buildings go up and come down and who cares, and they have no beauty or historical significance. It's an open-ended question, I guess, but how do you know, how does someone in the know when a building is worth, like it's worth saving for historical purposes or for some sort of reason beyond, because a lot of people are like, it's just an old building, tear it down, and it's like that bank building over there, you know. Extraordinary effort to save that building, and some people are like, it's ugly, and I'm like, it kind of misses the point, though. Is it because it's representative of a certain era of architecture?
Absolutely. The bank you're talking about is a Googie style, and that just means that that was a style of architecture back then that was very popular, and that is the only one in our region, and that's one of the reasons why they've tried so hard to save that. As for our building, it's a Richardsonian Romanesque building, which again is completely just amazing, and the cruciform form that the building is in with the dome on top is very indicative of that style. So these kinds of buildings,
even just like the strength, I don't know, there's something about the rough hewn limestone of the outside. I don't know. It looks like it was just like chipped right out of the ground or something.
It's unique, you know, where it has the four entrances. It's not something you really think about, but even with our architects, we've sort of had to, you know, what's the main entrance? You know, there's Main Street, but there's all this synergy on Short Street now with Upper and the Pavilion. And so people will be entering and exiting the building from all four sides, which made it, I think, a design challenge in a way, but it also gives it, it's very unique. But, you know, I think back to your question, if somebody looks at a building or goes in a building or has a feel that a building just sort of moves them in some way. It sounds silly, but I think, you know, there's a significance there to save it. And I do think the whole question of it's a building of a certain period is super important. And that was the instance with the People's Bank. I think it really spoke to people, you know, for whatever reason it spoke to them. And so there was this major just push to save this building. And same with the courthouse, I think.
Well, I know things go in and out of style. So I guess as a English professor, non-architectural kind of person who just loves it but doesn't understand the science of it and the all the factors, it's like, how do you know the difference between something that just was in style for a while and really doesn't have any significance beyond that and something that is historically significant or architecturally significant? I mean, I know there's not a pat answer to that. But it's a curious thing to me to try to figure that out, because that bank building, I'm sure, you know, went out of style and people are like, who cares? And now we see it as like this historically cool thing.
Kind of unique.
It's weird how all that works.
Something we're taught in architecture school is absolutely that beauty's in the eye of the beholder, and style is a personal thing. And if you do wait enough, long enough, then you realize, you know, either it was a visionary designer or something like that, that, you know, ends up being the reason why you want to keep that style around. Mm-hmm. And just the fact that I found graffiti from 1901 in the building when I was on my trek to the top of the Bell Cupola was just... It gave me chills.
Yeah.
It does
I'm
even
very
right now.
Curious about those hooligans that put that graffiti in there. But I am curious also about some of the things that you guys, that you have found in there. I'm wondering if you found any tiny elixir bottles in the basement, because they're my house is full of them. My house is full of them.
Sure.
Tonic. I don't know what the heck they are. You know, they're like these little bitty glass bottles.
There's been so many people in and out of there. I'm sure some people have taken some of the There's some cool stories. Like when you look up, when you walk in the back, the Short Street entrance, you can see faces carved in the, so they say those were the first jurors' faces of the building. The dome is going to have, we're sort of restoring or redoing the twin lights. This building was the first building in Lexington, so the story goes, that had electricity. And so there's all these neat little things. And Jessica's seen like carved faces.
Right. All those little niches that are in the dome where the arches come together. There's these little cherub faces that actually Charles Bertram with the Herald Leader had gone in and he took this beautiful close-up. If you go on his page, he's got a gallery of the old courthouse. And there's this beautiful photo of this little cherub face, and it just, he, you know, zoomed in on it. And I was, oh my gosh, it's gorgeous.
Are y'all you able to preserve that stuff?
We're going to do as much as we can, of course. Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. So, Charles is, was there a great photo on the front page of the paper yesterday or the day before? I'm not sure.
It might have been yesterday. They've had a couple that they've ran, but.
And Charles is Lexington treasure. And we have several incredible photographers, but Charles's stuff in particular, whenever I've seen the courthouse pictures, I'm like, that's Charles.
Yeah, has a look to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm glad that, that he's been getting up there and seeing this. And I'm really excited for everybody to see it. One thing I may have missed that I'm sort of curious about in general is, like, in the broad sense, I'm not sure if I understand what the building is going to be.
Okay.
Or if you know yet.
Yes, we do. And in fact, I think your listeners will probably be quite pleased.
A Marriott hotel, right?
Nothing too commercial cookie cutter, that's
right,
for sure.
Right.
But we are going to do a Windy Corner concept downstairs. So those are who are familiar with Weta Michael. She's going to do a sort of farm to table, work with the farmer's market, fresh produce, fresh meats, all of that restaurant downstairs.
She's just doing that because the farmer's market's right next door.
She's
got to get out more. Yeah. I mean, like.
So, and that'll be sort of a breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know, a price point that everybody can come and enjoy it. It's not, you know, $40 a plate, so you can come mm-hmm. enjoy. And we'll do a bourbon experience downstairs that'll be sort of local liquors, if you will, Kentucky-based. And then we'll have some office buildings, the visitors center, the visitors bureau, so there'll be horse farm tours coming in and out, and you can sort of sign up for all things Lexington, all things Fayette County.
Okay.
Then upstairs, which is going to be the grand event space, and so that's just really, that dome is just something.
The whole top floor will be an event center kind of space, and you can rent it, and whoever the management company ends up being, you know, will be the ones in charge of that. It's not going to be city run or anything like that. So mm-hmm. he'll be a manager of the space. And literally, 300 people capacity that
fairly
is
large.
Open to the dome.
Yeah.
So cool.
To the rotunda, yeah.
Now, having been up there once before, one of the things that struck me was I barely even noticed that it was there. From the outside of the courthouse, I mean, there's obviously the sort of, you know, the shape of it, but you don't think about it. You don't think,
no.
I don't know what I thought was in there, but.
Me neither. I know. Yeah. I mean, and then Jessica's climbed up, you know, all the way to the top. So she's been up in the little bell tower and took pictures, and there's this old clock that we're hoping to get working up there, the faces of the clock. And mm-hmm. when you're up in it, it's a lot bigger. I mean, the clock faces are huge.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yeah. If you've ever seen the movie Hugo, where the little kid takes care of the clocks in the Paris train station, that's what I felt like when I was up in there. Because we did, once the guano was removed from what we call the interstitial space between the dome itself and then the roof of the dome, there's actually a space in there, which is
that
really
terrifying.
Crazy.
Yeah, I only made it to floor number 5,
yeah,
and she went up, yeah.
So, yeah, I climbed all the way up there. There's these old wooden ship's ladders, which is the really steep kind of stair ladder kind of thing. And on top of the dome itself, before you get to the roof, is the clockworks building. There's a small little building up there that has, you know, all this clockworks that has all the gears and things like that, and there's 4 leads that go down to each one of those individual clock faces on the face of the building, on the exterior of the building.
Okay.
And it should be fantastic when it's all complete. And then, of course, from the top of that little building, you go out the scuttle and you're in the bell cupola, and you can take this amazing panorama picture if you wanted to and see all of Lexington. It's actually really tall, really high up, but you don't realize how much you can see from the top of the dome.
Right. We're here with Jessica Walker and Jennifer Warrenma, and we're talking about the many marvels that are inside the historic Lexington courthouse, which had fallen into significant disrepair over the years and absolute lack of use because of asbestos and lead and whatnot, and now it's a restoration project is fully underway. It must feel really good to be involved in something where you're saving something great.
It really does.
Yeah,
I moved here in 2002 from Michigan, and I remember the very first time I saw that building, and I saw the little history museum sign on there, and you sort of think like, what if, you know, what if it could be something else, or in addition to the history museum, something else? And so when the mayor decided to do this project and he wanted to push forward with it, it has been an honor to be involved in it. And to see what it's going to be when we got the actual renderings from the architects and saw what the vision that they had, it was just it is a Lexington treasure. And I think people, when they see this dome, they just will not believe that this has existed downtown for so many. I mean, it is a treasure.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I was here in Lexington for architecture school back in the 90s. And of course, we have a studio. I don't know if it doesn't exist anymore, but we used to have a studio in during my fourth year. I was downtown for that studio. And of course, you work on things that are downtown in the area. And it just, I never did really concentrate on historic structures or renovations or anything like that. It was always new construction because that's kind of what you do, unless that's your passion. But now that I've worked for the city, I get to work on all of our old buildings, like Arts Place, and then we'll have some work going on the Carnegie Center too. So I'm getting to really appreciate this all of the renovations of historic buildings.
Do you prefer the new construction or the
each of them have their joys and each of them have their headaches. Yeah. So yeah, it's definitely expanding my horizons.
I'd say there are a lot of headaches with older buildings because they didn't have a lot of things that we know you need to have in mind for buildings and safety things and environmental things and that you have to update. But it seems like would be such a rewarding process to save a worthwhile building and to rehab it for modern use.
Absolutely.
I was born here in 71 because I'm old, and my great-grandmother used to take me downtown. Downtown has changed so much since I was a kid. But when they first shuttered the courthouse, I was terrified they were going to tear it down because it's such a part of my childhood.
Yeah.
Just that building being there, I was really terrified they were going to just sweep it away. So I'm very inordinately pleased by this project.
And there, you know, I'd be remiss to not mention there's been a group of folks in Lexington, obviously, that have felt so strongly. You know, you have the Lexington History Museum, their whole group and their board. There's just been this passionate group that sort of kept it, you know, started 501c3s and sort of had this passion for the building. So on top of the municipal connection with it, there's been a group of these citizens who have always had a major love for this building and have assisted us. And, you know, as Jessica and I have presented in front of the Urban County Council and come here, and we've sort of sat with the Foster Ackermans and these people, and they've told us all these stories and all these tidbits of the trials that went on there and these different things about the building. And so, you know, we're very thankful for citizens like that as well. They've helped us, and they'll continue to help us as we build the website and find photos and do these types of things. So it's been the government, but it's also been these passionate citizens as well.
You know, there's a movement by, speaking of our Kentucky government, there's been a movement to discount, it's my interpretation, to discount anything that's not STEM-related fields, anything that doesn't lead to a job in industry you must not have in college. But the thing I love about architecture in these old buildings is you have to combine, you know, the humanities, art side with the very practical. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is I think all valuable things are like that. It's just why I think it's a mistake to try to separate them and to elevate one above the other. It kind of misses the point that being a human, you know, you have these soft bodies, but your hard skull, you know, you have all this mixture of these things, and to try to eliminate that misses the idea of stuff like the rotunda, which, you know, practical value. Well, that's what they try to do by shoving equipment up in there to make it totally practical, but it's not entirely practical. And that's a wonderful thing. And it makes life this multifaceted, multivarious thing that seems to me to split it up and say only practical, only STEM degrees, don't study history, don't study any humanities unless you're just rich and have a lark, misses the entire point. And I love architecture because it just illustrates to us that life is kind of a mixture of those two sides.
And our project team, I mean, I think that point is just spot on. When you look, we meet all the time, weekly. And when you look around the table, you see people with all these different backgrounds, and it has literally taken all of these different backgrounds to even get us to a point where we put a shovel in the ground 2 weeks ago. So you're absolutely right. It takes people with diplomacy backgrounds, architects, accountants, lawyers, all of these different people who have spent their career just negotiating and cooperating with all different types of legislative bodies. And so it has taken exactly what you said to get us to where we are at this moment.
Yeah.
Well, along those lines, too, having talked to and been, you know, acquainted with some of the People's Bank organizers, and then most recently, if you saw yesterday, where Griffin Van Meter has made, you know, overtures to help save the Hardy House in Harrison County near Cynthiana. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think that's interesting that's come up a lot is there's actually, I don't know that there's anyone that's actually sort of malevolently against these things. It's just that it doesn't occur to them. There's a lot of people in business who are just like, well, it's just not, it's that place is a blight. It's not, you know, we can put something better there or that's whatever. Right. Yeah. But like you guys are saying, if you just have the conversation a lot of times, and sometimes you have to have it a few times.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Then I think that a lot of times you can get people to sort of see the benefit of these things. And you know, it's easy to see it once you unveil this kind of shining, redone building. But it's much harder at the outset when you've got the Lyric Theater in shambles or the Hardy House, you know, not looking so great in the picture that's in the paper.
Yeah.
Or you guys seeing, you know, the vision of this, you know, shuttered old courthouse building that's going to cost a lot of money to fix.
Yeah, financial feasibility seems to win out sometimes compared to preserving what our built environment might be. And that's something that I know that, you know, our historians at LFUCG and then, you know, just historians in general, historic preservationists are fighting hard to do. And I think that, you know, we're very blessed that we can actually have this kind of tax incentive money to in order to keep these things, because it's preserving our history. You know, buildings these days are only built to last for maybe 40, 50 years. And right now we're at 115 years, you know, with the old courthouse.
And the foundation, so, everything's still really solid
still
on that.
Good.
I'm sure
our report told us it was. And I think, you know, if you sort of think about now, the world is so connected and social media, and you can start, you know, you take a city like Charleston, like it's been able to become this like tourist hub because there's been such a push for historic preservation. And so I think when you think about Lexington or specifically the courthouse or the People's Bank or, you know, the house, you know, houses Griffins wanted to save in Lexington, I think that, you know, people come to our city because it's unique and it's something different other than just big box stores, and they come downtown and they see all these beautiful buildings, and it's really motivated people, I think, to sort of think about what could this be instead of just tearing it down. And that's definitely where the mayor was when he decided to do this building, and boy was he right. You know, when you see what it's going to be, it was just spot on that this could be a treasure and a tourist destination and a destination for us that live in Lexington to come and eat, have a drink, you know, attend an event. So
right,
very exciting.
Well, I'm so happy for you guys to come down here, and I would love to. So what's the, I want you to come back and talk about this some more, assuming, you know, before it's done in a couple weeks.
Try spring of 2018.
Is that what it is? 2018.
Spring of 2018. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And for the people that are going to be downtown, really starting today, it's the fence is out. You know, they're in there. There's dumpsters. The fence is now expanded. Its footprint is out.
I'm just going to say personally, this is my personal view, it's going to be done before Center Point.
Actually. Yeah, regardless.
All things equal. Yeah. Probably so.
So let's see. Jennifer Warenma and Jessica Walker of the Historic Downtown Courthouse Preservation Project. I can see the pride in your eyes. I really can.
I think they're just drunk.
Yeah. Our pride means please be patient with us, though, because we are occupying the pavilion a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just be patient with us. We have a lot of work to do to give you something fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. But
I think it seems that it's going to be absolutely fantastic. And so, again, for, you know, as we live in hopefully more and more of a community embracing world, it seems like it is sort of a popular thing for
seems that way
these,
yeah.
lately. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and hopefully continuing to be so. How can people who are curious kind of stay up to date on
well, we'll
on
be updating the website. We will, you know, I'm sure there'll be some media interaction as we move forward. If you have us back, of course, we'll update that way as well. But we're really going to be pushing forward at this point. Like I said, the fence is expanded and they're working, and this is it. So we'll be over there. We're over there every day, but there's a lot of folks over there, and we of course manage on site watching everything. And so if people have questions, they don't ever fail to poke through the fence and ask us or grab us on the street. And we're always happy to talk about where we are and where we're going.
Okay. Well, and then also I'm posting a link on the Trivial Thursdays page, but you do have the website, historiclexingtoncourthouse.com.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So so people, I assume there'll be, that's a good place for updates too. And maybe even a link there to Charles Bertram's. I hope Charles keeps like a
he does.
A repository
I've seen him
of photos.
On the Hair Leaders website. Yeah,
I believe it is linked. We worked on this late the other night adding content, so I believe there is a link on the right hand side now.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you all so much for coming down
for
and giving
us
the update.
And, thanks.
This is Trivial Thursdays on WRFL, and we're going to take a little break here and come back with some more goodies. I think that Natasha Collier is going to be here from the Lex Spectro Patronum. I thought I had mastered that. the Harry Potter Society. So they're going to be here, I believe, in a few minutes, and we're going to play some music. We'll be back with Leif Erickson.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.
WRFL Trivial Thursdays here. This is Mick. I'm your host. I'm here with Leif Erickson.
Hello.
And thanks to the Courthouse Review people for coming down and talk. Not review, the courthouse. See, I'm still scarred by Centerpoint.
I was going to say, what kind of review?
The Courthouse Preservation Project, which was fascinating to hear about. And a few songs there in our musical break that I am shamelessly dedicating to my mother-in-law, Loris Points. We had Fiona Apple with the song Waltz from Extraordinary Machine, and the Beatles with Honey Pie. You put those two together and you get
sense of
apple
theme.
Pie
uh-huh.
a little bit. Elvis was in there with Blue Moon of Kentucky. That was a little bit of an accident.
Well, blue cheese sometimes goes along with apple pie. We can make this work.
That's crazy.
I've never understood it, but I know people do that.
That makes me shudder. last week I had the funny occasion of I was teaching a summer camp. I taught this summer ukulele camp at the Lexington School, and my daughter was going to camp there because I was teaching. She got to go. And so we were trying to figure out after the camp, which ended at noon, whether we were going to eat lunch there, because she had this passion for eating lunch in the cafeteria. Mm-hmm. The way the week started was, you know, like if you were a camper all day long, there was two camps, morning and afternoon, and the all-day campers, of course, brought their own lunch, and they would eat in the lunchroom. We were only there for the morning session, but my daughter, after the first day, she was like, Daddy, I want to eat lunch in the cafeteria. And I was like, being just a normal adult, and I was like, oh well, we can't do that because we don't have an afternoon camp, so you know, there'd be no point for us staying for lunch. And then at that point my daughter became a four-year-old and was like, man, I want to eat lunch in the cafeteria.
She wants rectangular pizza.
And so so I was like, okay, no problem, we can make this work. So we were doing the lunch thing, right? And so on Friday we knew that there was the Great American Pie Contest downtown. And there was some question, by the way, if you've never been, you can go and have free pie. Mm. That's the main draw, okay? The main draw is going and having free pie. The question was whether we could make it in time and whether or not, you know, I involved my four-year-old in this decision, not all decisions, but in this decision. So I'm like, would you rather stay for the cafeteria lunch, or would you rather go downtown and maybe get some apple pie? Because we might miss it. And she chose to stay for the cafeteria lunch. What we didn't reckon for was that her grandmother might win the contest.
Oh. Probably should have been there for that.
I told my mother-in-law, Loris Points, quite candidly, because she's a candid person and I am too. I was like, Loris, in all of our planning, it never occurred to me that you might win the contest. Even though I was the one that helped submit her recipe. So anyway, a huge, three cheers for Loris Points.
Hurrah, hurrah, hurrah.
Who I discovered when I began dating her younger daughter that she was a famous Lexington school teacher. And so now to that she can add and longtime community activist and occasional Gladys Kravitz. You don't want to live too close to Laura. Have you seen what they're doing over there? But anyway, so yeah, so she won the Great American Pie Contest, which they have in Lexington every year around this time, with her apple rhubarb pie. And I've been trying to celebrate it ever since then. You know, of course, trying to get more pie over at our house. So that was our pie song, so it was for Laura's points and her victory, which was in the paper yesterday. And I took her on this victory tour in my brother's convertible.
Wow,
and,
fancy.
She was on the radio on WLXL, the Lexington Community Radio, which is such a fine entity when you're not listening to to WRFL.
Put them both on at the same time. Just start two radios and just have them both playing. Your brain can handle it.
So we've got, like I said, this is Trivial Thursdays. It's like 25 until 8 and...
9.
Thank you. That's why I have you along for the ride.
Timekeeper.
Because I am so often wrong. It's a trademark feature of the show. Natasha Collier's here.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to see you.
I'm glad to be back.
Let's see. So you have... You've always got so many things going on, Natasha. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know, where do we start? Where do we even start, you know?
Well, today I'm here to talk about the Lexington Harry Potter Alliance.
Right. Which is something you're one of the, kind of the founders of that, right?
Sarah Beth Brown Robey, she's the headmistress. She really spearheaded everything. And I would, you know, I've been one of the kind of founding members since she got things off the ground. And it's been a fun and exciting ride on my Nimbus 2000.
Well, you guys, so like when you first came on, you've been on the show a few times to talk about Lex Specto Patronum. Mm-hmm. Oh, shoot, I did it. I get a little nervous every single time.
You did. I heard it earlier.
And at first, you know, I was kind of like, when you first talked about it, I just kind of thought, what? But you guys, because, you know, I think, oh, well, it's a Harry Potter fan club, you know, big whoop.
So much more.
It's much, much more than that. You guys are, I mean, kind of a social justice organization. How else would you describe
Really making Patronum? Activism accessible through the power of story. So taking that popular culture that someone can relate to and putting social justice themes behind it. So right now we're getting ready to start a series of meetings in July and August on inclusive spaces. So we've done, you know, we did our Winter Wizarding Waltz.
How'd that go this year?
It was fantastic. We packed the house, and it was a sold-out event, and it was so wonderful. And the March Madness marching band came and rocked it once more. had a wonderful, you know, themed dinner from Chef Renata, and we'll do that again the last Saturday in February, and that's our fundraiser.
Did you do it at the Plannery?
We did.
Okay.
We did, and it's growing, so we may end up having to find a new venue.
Yeah.
So that was fantastic. And we've done, you know, we did our radical pirate book drive again. And so, you know, we established.
And what does that do?
So we have a mobile book library that on bicycles that we can take out into the community in, you know, literary deserts, you know, places that, you know, people might not have, you know, access to go to the library. You know, it might be too far away from them. And so we can take that out into the community at the, you know, local pools at you know, community centers and get books to the people, which is awesome. But I say all of that to, you know, kind of segue into our new series that we're starting on inclusive spaces.
But before you do, I want to stop you because the bookmobile thing, mm-hmm. that was something you kind of unveiled that recently, right?
Yeah, we did. We had
it's like a library on a bike or something.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Cool.
So it's, you know, these trailers that can be hooked to any bike, and, you know, can be taken around town. And we're also, we have a stationary library at the Plantry now, where people can come and get books. So that's, you know, just another thing that we've done, which is fantastic. And it also, you know, ties into the Harry Potter Alliance, the national organization's mission, Accio Books, which is, you know, bringing, you know, collecting books and bringing them and making sure that people who need them can have them, and also collecting diverse books. Because one thing that we found is with book drives, there are a lot of books that are kind of targeted to young white people. And so we want books that are in, you know, other languages, books with, you know, persons of color, you mm-hmm. know, as the protagonists. So we want to make sure everyone's represented. And representation is really important to us. And so our new series, Inclusive Spaces, we're having a series of meetings on creating spaces, carving spaces out in our community for everyone. And so we're going to be talking to members of the trans community. We're going to be talking to Meredith Swim with Green Dot, and she's going to do a bystander training for us.
What's Green Dot?
Green Dot Lexington is a bystander program it's a program to help alleviate violence in Lexington. And okay. So trainings, we're going to have a training to help spot situations and you know, kind of de-escalate situations. And so basically, you know, making spaces safer for everyone mm-hmm. in Lexington. And so we're going to be meeting at the Central Library on Wednesday, the 13th and the 20th. So for our first meeting.
Wait, who's this open to?
Oh, it's open to everyone. That's okay. A great thing. And so, you know, we're always recruiting, always trying to grow interest, because there are a lot of Harry Potter fans in Lexington, and we want to mobilize everyone because, you know, there's so many passionate people who are passionate about social justice, and also people who are interested in popular culture, and we're just kind of trying to fuse the two. But we have one thing that we want to do is kind of tap into the campaigns that Big HPA has been doing. And so on Wednesday the 13th, we are having a meeting about Protego. And Protego is a protection spell in the Harry Potter universe. And this particular campaign, it spells and actions to make the world better for the trans community. And so okay. We're going to have information about empowering transgendered people, educating cisgender people, which, you know, people who are, identify as the sex that they were born with. And it's how to be effective allies, how to provide resources, make safe spaces safer. You know, we've all heard about this bathroom issue that people have created. And we want to be another resource where people can find information and support. And that's, you know, a large number of members of the Big HPA community identify as transgender. And we want to make sure that they have, you know, a safe space for that. And so our first meeting is Wednesday, July 13th at 6 at the Central Library. And we're really excited to bring more of that, you know, Big HPA kind of campaigns back into what we're doing. But we have so much going on. It's always uh-huh. so much fun.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You just said Big HPA.
Yeah, so we're a chapter
okay.
of the Harry Potter Alliance.
See, HPA. I'm sorry. You're talking Harry Potter Alliance yeah. in abbreviation. I'm like, okay, I get it.
So we're a local chapter of the Harry Potter Alliance. So, you know, they have all of these campaigns and things that are going on. And we tap into them every so often. But we've also found that what works for us is just kind of doing our own thing and blazing our own trail.
Right.
And that's what we've done with a lot of things, but this is really important to us and really important to, you know, the main organization.
So how do you do like this? You've got people who love the world of Harry Potter mm-hmm. and then you've got these social justice mm-hmm. issues. And how do you kind of like, how do you weave those together? That's the part that I think is always pretty interesting.
Sure. So like with Accio Books, you know, it's all about literacy. And we basically take issues of that are, you know, these real world issues. We're going to be doing a Fantastic Beasts event. The new Harry Potter World movie, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, comes out in November, and it's based on a textbook about magical beasts. And so we're going to, you know, hopefully, you know, be doing an event and a campaign that'll tie along with that. With, you know, a local animal shelter. So we're always picking, you know, real world issues and things from the Harry Potter universe. So, you know, magical beasts and
the Harry Potter books have, you know, there's stuff in there about being accepted and bullying.
Absolutely.
And being yourself and, mm-hmm. and being marginalized for being different.
Absolutely. Yeah,
a lot of those themes throughout those books.
Yeah, Yeah, and I mean, Hogwarts itself is a safe space, you know, right. It's a safe and inclusive space for wizarding folks. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's just, we want everyone to feel accepted, to feel welcomed, and that's just absolutely one thing that we try to do. You know, we've got issues, you know, like you said, the issues of bullying and things like that. So, you know, we're working on campaigns with, you know, just all kinds of wonderful, mm-hmm. wonderful topics. So.
I saw Harry Potter yesterday, as a matter of fact. I mean, right. in a movie, Swiss Army Man. One of the stranger movies I've seen in a while. If you don't know anything about it, don't read about it. Just go watch it. That's how I went into it. I didn't even know he was in it. I like to go in movies that way. I went in completely blind. And I'm not sure still what I think of the movie. It's positive. I mean, in my mind, it was a positive experience. But I've never seen a movie like that. I recommend it.
You're talking about Daniel
Radcliffe. Okay. Yeah, Daniel Radcliffe and Paul Dano are in that. Mm-hmm. And I won't even try to describe what it's about. Because I think, because someone told me afterward what they would have summed it up as, and I was like, I'm glad I didn't know that before I went to the movie, because there's no way to sum up this movie, even if you could give a list of facts and it wouldn't do it. I recommend it. It's at the Kentucky Theater right now.
Well, anything's great to see at the Kentucky.
Yeah, definitely.
Anything. Hey, so one of the things we touch on here is that I always like kind of bouncing around with you, Natasha, is Wizard Rock,
mm-hmm.
which is... How would you explain it?
It's rock and roll, and it's with a kind of Harry Potter theme or you know kind of motifs that are from the Harry Potter and wizarding universe. A lot of them, like Tonks and the Oars. There's there's Harry
Potter. What do you mean
Potters.
One of them? You said
there's
you said
so
one
many.
Of them.
Like I just was like I did
so
not
so many bands
even
that
know.
play
so
this
many
Wizard
bands
rock.
That play Wizard Rock. Like Harry and the Potters was the kind of the father group of all of these. And there's Percy and the Prefix. I mean, all of these kind of local bands that have risen to fame within the Harry Potter fandom. And we you know we had Tonks and the Oars at our first. Uh-huh. Winter Wizarding Waltz last year, and so she was a lot of fun.
And so, and there's, I'd just like to point out that you didn't mention the Mudbloods.
The Mudbloods.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the Mudbloods have an album that pays, that sort of underscores what you're saying in terms of the reach of Wizard Rock, because mm-hmm. they have an album called Wizard Rock Is Not Dead.
Nice.
Indicating... Yeah. That there's enough Wizard Rock to have an album called Wizard
exactly.
Rock.
Exactly.
Long live Wizard Rock.
Long, right. Yes.
So, well, you know, now everybody's really curious. So I think we're going to play this track. This is called Butterbeer. And, you know, I should probably know what that's about. But,
Butterbeer is the favorite drink for they, you know, the in the wizarding world, they'll go to Hogsmeade Village and drink butterbeer. It's a nice delicacy. We've had butterbeer drinks from Chef Renata made a butterbeer drink at the Wizarding Waltz. Pat down at Third Street, she's done butterbeer drinks for us as well. So hopefully.
So it's non-alcoholic.
Yeah, you will.
It
you,
could be either way.
You could be either way. Uh-huh. But we've done the non-alcoholic.
I like butter and I like beer, but I don't know about the combination.
And they, you know, they serve it down at the Harry Potter theme park. You can get it in these nice mm-hmm. steins.
What if you show up at Third Street Steph and ask for butter beer? What happens?
I think they'll whip something up for you.
They'll whip something up.
Yeah.
This is the Mudbloods. We're going to come back with Natasha Collier of the Harry Potter Alliance and. Leif Erickson also. This is Trivial Thursdays on WRFL. WRFL Trivial Thursdays, your Wizard Rock headquarters at the moment. Percy and the Prefix there with Which is Which, which, you know, somewhat unintentionally was a bathroom song.
So. I know. I hadn't really been too familiar with Percy and the Prefix. So.
That's from Which is Which Demos album, mm-hmm, by the way.
That was a nice surprise.
The album, I guess, big enough that they released another album called The Demos. It was like, here's how those songs, those songs you know and love, here's how sounded when we first thought of them. And then before that, The Mudbloods with Butterbeer.
Butterbeer.
Both these songs kind of inspired by not just kind of, but inspired by seemingly by almost by rather specific things that happen mm-hmm. in Harry Potter
very,
movies.
Very kind of plucking right out of the wizarding world. Absolutely.
So Natasha Collier's here of the Harry Potter Alliance. The Lex Specto Patronum chapter, Lex Specto Patronum yes. chapter. I've almost got it.
Yes.
of which there, do you know how many chapters there are? Ballpark?
Hundreds. I mean, there, yeah. you know, there are four that I can think of in Kentucky. There's, and we were heavily supported by the Woodford County Whiz and Gamut, Noah and Claire, who you've met.
Wait, they started their own thing?
Yeah, they existed. They predate Lex Specto. There is a chapter in Northern Kentucky, and I know of a chapter in Western Kentucky as well. But we're kind of the central, and we like to bring everybody, you know, from out of town and everything too, because you know we do these big events, and I mean we had people coming from Indianapolis and Cincinnati and Tennessee for the Wizarding Waltz this
year. So each chapter has their own projects yep, and issues, indeed. But it's all social justice related.
All social justice okay. related, and you know there are a lot of high school chapters, there are a lot of college chapters, and we are unique in that we're a community chapter. There are fewer community chapters, so we really want to include everybody, and we do. We have a very wide range of membership. You know, we have working professionals, we have high school students, and just everyone has kind of the same mission, and it's making Lexington and then the world a better place. So you know I've really enjoyed my time, you know, in being involved with it. And you know we have this great series, like I said, mentioned before, that we're you know heading into on Inclusive Spaces. And we're also, you know, one other thing we talked about Protego, which is you know making a safe space for the trans community. We talked about Green Dot. We're also going to do a meeting where we talk about something that's kind of sprung up because of the new Harry Potter movie and Fantastic Beasts. There's a North American wizarding school that's featured in this movie, and so when J.K. Rowling wrote, you know, about this school and created this school, they released a lot of information on Pottermore, which is this, you know, Harry Potter kind of repository for all this information online, and created this school and ended up drawing a lot from like Native American traditions, but wasn't really giving a lot of proper attribution.
Okay, this is that. I've seen glimpses of this mm-hmm. in the media. So yeah, tell us more about
so,
that.
So there are four houses for this new school, much like Hogwarts, and so their names are taken from Native myth. And there is a lot of contention in the community, in the Harry Potter community, about this. Taking these kind of native cultural themes and appropriating it for the Harry Potter-esque house, this wizarding house, without kind of saying, okay, well, this comes from native kind of mythology, okay. And there's talking about colonialism and those sorts of themes. And so we're going to have a meeting where we kind of talk about that. Mary Landrum with the Lexington Public Library has mm-hmm. some wonderful resources about Native Americans in fiction that she's going to share with us. There's a blogger that kind of rewrote the way this should have been handled, and so I'm really excited to talk about this because I'm a historian by schooling, and so I love to study about mythology and about these cultures, but I personally want them to be kind of showcased and appreciated in the right way, rather than just kind of plucked here and there for.
So the discussion should be kind of interesting because it'll be like a discussion that's mostly populated by people who are fans of Harry Potter, but also because it sounds like this new property is sort of an attempt to spin up a kind of Harry Potter-esque world in which as much stuff can happen as happened across the Harry Potter novels.
Absolutely. And so, and we do, you know, there have been people who love this concept and, you know, really consider it more of, you know, cultural appreciation rather than cultural appropriation. And so we hope that there's going to be a really great discussion and, mm-hmm. and some great viewpoints from both sides.
Now, that's on the calendar?
It will be. So check, keep check of our page. We'll have all of that information up that'll be one of our August meetings. And so we'll have that up very soon. But right now we've got our June 13th and 20th meetings, both at the Central Library. That's Protego with Trans Rights, and then we have our Green Dot Bystander Training with Meredith from Green Dot Lexington, the 13th and the 20th, respectively, 6 p.m. at the Central Library, and both of those, all of our meetings are open to the public.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Not just open to the public, but, I mean, you really want it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. On all ages, shapes, mm-hmm. sizes, and colors.
Absolutely.
Natasha Collier here from L'Expecto Patronum, the Harry Potter Alliance here in Lexington. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for